Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Public education was a big winner in Kentucky last night after Democrat Andy Beshear claimed a narrow victory over Republican Governor Matt Bevin, who has not yet conceded. Throughout his tenure, Matt Bevin worked to undermine public education, cut teachers' pensions, and he also ridiculed them. In December, he said teacher strikes left children vulnerable to sexual assault. Democrat Andy Beshear campaigned on major changes for public education. He says he will end Kentucky's teacher shortage, increase mental health services for children, fund teachers' pensions, and called for smaller class sizes and fewer standardized tests. He says he will not sign a budget unless it sufficiently funds education. Andy Beshear claimed victory with just over 5,000 votes out of 1.4 million cast. And we should say that Kentucky is a state that Donald Trump won by a whopping 30 points. And then last month, the Chicago Teachers Union held their longest strike in more than three decades. After 11 days on the picket line, the teachers agreed to suspend their strike and accept a tentative agreement. The union did not get everything they asked for, but they did win a big victory, including an extra $30 million in their education budget. The 24,000 members of the Chicago Teachers Union had many requests, including caps on class sizes and a requirement to put a nurse and social worker in every school. This is actually a demand that we're hearing from teachers across the country. They want nurses and they want social workers on staff. For the first time ever in Chicago, they won caps on class size and even received a commitment to put a nurse and a social worker in every school, although the hiring process could take up to 5 years. Funding equity remains a very big issue. According to Education Trust, in the United States today, school districts serving the largest population of Black, Latino, or Native American students receive roughly $1,800 or 13% less per student in state and local funding than those serving the fewest students of color. And this really does add up. So what do these teacher strikes reveal about how little funding public education receives today, and how can we make public education more equitable for teachers and their students? Today we are joined by Diane Ravitch, a historian of education and research professor of education at New York University. Diane is founder and president of the Network for Public Education. From 1991 to 1993, Diane was assistant secretary of education during the George H.W. Bush administration. She was actually a proponent of No Child Left Behind, and then she became opposed. She was actually a supporter of it, and then she became an opponent. She was responsible for the Office of Educational Research and Improvement in the U.S. Department of Education. From 1997 to 2004, Diane Ravitch was a member of the National Assessment Governing Board, which oversees the federal testing program. She is the author of 12 books. Her latest is The Wisdom and Wit of Diane Ravitch, and her forthcoming book is called Slaying Goliath. It's about the resistance to the privatization of schools. And Diane Ravitch joins us from Brooklyn, New York. Hi, Diane. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks. Great to be with you. I'm on the street in Brooklyn, New York.
You're on the street in Brooklyn, New York. Well, Diane, it's always so good to have you, and it's been a while, so thank you so much. I want to, first off, get your thoughts about what happened in Kentucky last night. Democrat Andy Beshear claimed a narrow victory. Republican Governor Matt Bevin has not conceded yet, but this was a victory for public education because these two could not be more different when it comes to so many issues, but definitely public education.
Well, this is, I think, the defining issue for Matt Bevin, and it's what defeated him. Kentucky is a state that Trump won by 30 points in 2016. Matt Bevin was then elected by 9 points, and I think he has been defeated because he has insulted the teachers of Kentucky. He has tried to destroy their pensions and take them away, turn them into 401ks, and the teachers were outraged. And he's also promoted charters and vouchers. He had Betsy DeVos there last spring, and that didn't help him. And then he had Donald Trump there Monday night, and that didn't help him either. So he thanked teachers, and I think teachers made the difference.
Right, because teachers really came out in droves for Andy Beshear, and they were so well organized in Kentucky.
Absolutely. They had two major protests at the Capitol, protesting against Bevin's efforts to privatize public education. Bevin has a supermajority in the legislature of Republicans. He was able to pass legislation for charters, but even though Republicans control the legislature, they never funded the charters. So Kentucky has a charter law and no charters.
And talk just about, so much has changed, Diane, with all of the teacher strikes across the country. This is now at the top of so many people's minds and lists in terms of what's important. Somewhere like Kentucky, for example, where you've got Republicans who openly criticize teachers, who say that they're going to cut pensions, who cut budgets, who take out social workers and nurses, where, I mean, it's not just Kentucky. Even in California, a very wealthy state, teachers are working two jobs to make ends meet. But in a place like Kentucky, when you talk about budget cuts, it really hurts the teachers and the kids and, I mean, the entire staff.
Well, what's happened over the last 2 years, not quite 2 years, it started in March of 2018, is a rolling wave of teacher strikes. In California, most recently, with UTLA. And then last week, the Chicago teachers ended their strike. But I think what happened to the teachers has changed the national conversation, because we have had 10 solid years of billionaires. And first the Bush administration, then the Arne Duncan, and then Betsy DeVos bashing teachers, bashing public schools, and creating a narrative that said the reason the scores aren't going up is because of bad teachers. And so teachers heard this again and again. And the main result of this narrative has been to dramatically reduce the number of people who are willing to become teachers, increase the retirement rate of experienced teachers, and you can't have schools without teachers. And Teacher America, which is a very short timeline of 5 weeks of training, cannot produce enough teachers to replace the millions of experienced teachers who were being beaten up. So instead of taking it, the teachers said, starting in West Virginia in February of 2018, we're not going to take it anymore. And every single school in the state of West Virginia closed down in February of 2018. And it was 55 counties. It's illegal to strike in West Virginia, and they struck anyway, and they won. And since that time, we've seen state after state follow the lead of the West Virginia teachers.
Right. State after state, including California. Diane, you have such an interesting background. Just to let people know about where you're coming from, give us a sense of the awakening that you've had when it comes to public education, because you've really changed your opinions on many issues.
Well, absolutely. And I think it's one of the reasons why my views have gotten more attention is because I used to be on the other side. During the 1980s, 1990s, and even after the passage of No Child Left Behind, I was on board with the idea of high-stakes testing, charter schools. I even at one point wrote an article in favor of vouchers, and I have recanted all of that. I did it starting about 2007, when I realized that none of this stuff was working. I was a fellow at the Hoover Institution in Stanford with the creme de la creme of conservative intelligentsia, and I was on other conservative think tanks. But, I never stopped thinking. I kept thinking, this stuff isn't working. All the things that we're advocating doesn't work. So I wrote a book in 2010 called The Death and Life of the Great American School System, How Testing and Choice Are Undermining Education, and publicly declared that I was no longer on that team, but had come around full circle. I don't know if it's full circle or half circle, but made a complete reversal of my views and became very outspoken in opposition to privatization and outspoken in opposition to this barrage of high-stakes standardized tests. My new book shows that the evidence is now in that none of this works. It does not produce better schools. It does not produce better educated students. And the testing in particular has been very, very, very damaging to students and to schools.
What was it that made you take such a dramatic shift?
Evidence. Now, when you see that what you've been recommending doesn't work, then you either become a complete ideologue with a closed mind, as so many people are on the other side, or you say, this doesn't work, I have to reconsider what I'm thinking. And so this is what happened when I was at the Hoover Institution. I was with the best of the best. And there came a time where, even back then in the early 2000s, we realized charter schools were opening and closing, and it didn't make sense to continue to support them, but I dropped out. The group that I dropped out from continued to be very strong supporters of charters and also of high-stakes testing. And I think by now the evidence is very clear that high-stakes testing does not produce better results.
Today we're speaking with Diane Ravitch, a historian of education and research professor of education at New York University. Her forthcoming book is called Slaying Goliath. It's about the resistance to the privatization of schools. And Diane really did a 180 when it comes to public education. As she said, she supported No Child Left Behind, charters, high-stakes testing, and now she opposes those policies and is a big proponent of funding public education, and we will also talk about equity. If you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. If you were part of any teacher strike, if you've seen changes in education over the years, we'd love to hear from you. What changes would you like to see? You can also tweet us at yourcallradio. Diane, let's also just quickly talk about how far public education has come, because I don't remember, what was it, 4 years ago, public education was just being slammed. You know, the theme was you can't fire bad teachers, public education is not working, and we need more charters and you need to fire bad teachers. And that was a media conversation that did not include the voices of teachers. And then we saw this wave of teacher strikes, and they used social media to show us how books were completely, you know, pages were missing, how chairs were broken, how mold was in the classroom, how kids did not have what they needed. It was cold in the classroom, how teachers were working two or three jobs. So teachers were able to tell their own stories, and students also came out to support their teachers and the bus drivers and the janitors and the staff. So let's talk about that shift. I mean, that was a dramatic shift.
Well, it is a dramatic shift, because what happened as a result of the teacher strikes was that people stopped complaining about bad teachers. I think that what teachers understand, and I think what public school educators understand, is that bad teachers really don't last long. And if kids are not learning, it's not because they have bad teachers, but because they're in poverty or because they don't speak English. That's a real barrier to succeeding on a standardized test if you don't speak or read English. Children with extreme disabilities do very poorly on standardized tests. So what the so-called reformers, and I don't, in my new book, I don't call them reformers. I call them disruptors, because this is what they have aimed to do, is disrupt public education. Because coming from the business world, particularly so many of them made their billions in Silicon Valley, they believe in disruption, and that anything that isn't disrupted has to be reinvented. So they want to reinvent it. So you have billionaires like Lorraine Powell Jobs, Steve Jobs' wife, or Reed Hastings, who owns Netflix, or Eli Broad, who is a Los Angeles billionaire. I have a chapter in my new book, Slaying Goliath, called Who are the Leaders of This Disruption Movement? And it's page after page of billionaires. And you think none of them have ever taught in a school. Probably very few of them ever went to a public school. They don't send their own children to public schools. How do they suddenly become experts in education, and why do they think they have the right to reinvent other people's schools? Most people in America love their local public school. Now, they have been inundated with negative propaganda now for 25 years or so. And so when they're asked, well, how do you feel about American education? They'll say, oh, It's in bad shape. Well, how do you feel about your local public school? Oh, my local public school is great. I love the teachers. I love the school. My kids are very happy there. So there has been this repeated difference of opinion between how people feel about the school they know best and what they think about American education, which has been a target for all of this Koch brothers, DeVos family-funded propaganda for decades.
Diane, we've had you on to talk about these billionaires who are trying to change the face of public education. Given that you wrote this new book called Slaying Goliath, did you learn anything new about their end game?
Well, when you're looking at the Koch brothers and Betsy DeVos, the end game is to completely privatize public education. What they see is parents getting a voucher. This is what they aim for in Arizona, where there was a referendum just earlier this year. And they want all children, all families, to have a voucher, which they can use anywhere. They can pay Aunt Nellie to tutor them. They can go to a business school. They can go buy a new computer and do homeschooling. Their idea is do your own thing. The funny thing is, this is not forward thinking. This is pretty much the way education worked in about 1800. So it goes back over two centuries to a time when there were no public schools, and families were on their own. The difference is that they want to transfer public funds to families to do their own thing. And Arizona has found that families, they do have a voucher program, but it only covers a few thousand kids. And families are using the money to buy clothing and to do things that are totally non-educational, to go to amusement parks, to do things that have nothing whatever to do with learning. So the Koch brothers, DeVos, and this very right-wing orientation is to demolish, to use public funding to demolish public schooling.
And is it safe to assume, Diane, that these people, if they have kids, send their kids to very expensive private schools? I've even read that some of them send their kids to schools that do not have standardized tests and do not rely on technology to learn.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't know where the Koch brothers are the one remaining Koch brother sent their children, but I'm willing to bet any amount of money that they never set foot in a public school. Betsy DeVos was educated in religious schools, and her own children were educated in religious schools, and she thinks that's right for everyone. The trouble with that is that there are many religious schools. There are some religious schools that do a good job, but there are many, many religious schools that teach racism, homophobia, that fire teachers, if they find that they are not straight, you know, straight and exactly what they think their religious ideal is, and they're using the Bible as a science textbook. Now, no one can argue with any degree of integrity that the Bible is the source of science in the year 2019. It's a very important source of ancient wisdom. It is not a source of science, technology, or history, for that matter. And yet there are religious voucher schools in Florida and elsewhere that are teaching from textbooks that say that dinosaurs lived with human beings, and people actually wrote on dinosaurs. This is insane.
Wow. Today we're speaking with Diane Ravitch, historian of education and research professor of education at New York University. She's out with a new book. It's coming out called Slaying Goliath. It's about the resistance to the privatization of schools, and she writes about the billionaires whose end game is to privatize public education. But as we've seen over the last couple of years, teachers, students, parents, and communities are really stepping up and fighting the effort to privatize school by saying, no, we want our public schools to be fully funded. We want basic things like nurses, social workers. And Diane, that's the one thing that's been so interesting is when the West Virginia strike happened, I feel like a lot of people, especially living in more Democratic states, said, oh yeah, look at what's going on in that red state. Well, then you got strikes in blue states like California and Oakland. I mean, we've had teachers on in San Francisco who say that they don't have what they need and they also have to work two jobs to make ends meet. And a lot of people are learning that in schools with a very high poverty, we do not have full-time nurses, full-time social workers, and full-time librarians.
Well, to me, this is quite amazing because I went to public school in Houston, Texas, many, many years ago, and we had arts every day. We had a nurse in the school. If you, you know, skinned your knee and needed a Band-Aid, they'd send you to the nurse's office. There was a social worker to help kids who had problems, and those schools were not overfunded. But I don't understand why, with the growing wealth in our society, we continue to have schools where teachers have to go out on strike to get a nurse in their school. And to show you how important this is, Philadelphia was stripped bare by the charter movement a couple of years ago. And it's a little bit at a time, but over time, the Philadelphia schools didn't have nurses anymore. And two children have died in Philadelphia schools because there was no nurse. And they died of ailments that could have been saved, their lives could have been saved, but there was no medical professional in the building. And that's outrageous.
Wow. So how did we get to this place, Diane, where we do not have nurses in public schools?
It's a simple matter of underfunding. And so you get, first of all, the propaganda campaign. And when you ask, well, who's funding the propaganda, most of the funders are coming from the far right. And where I have to hold the Obama and Duncan administration accountable is that their own program, which was called Race to the Top, was simply the George W. Bush program, but made more punitive. Mm-hmm. And their idea was that the schools are filled with bad teachers, that the teachers weren't doing their job, and the teachers were threatened, or offered bonuses, merit pay, that they were offered punishments and rewards, they would work harder and the students would get higher grades. We now know that that's totally not true. I mean, they've been doing merit pay. Billions of dollars have been wasted on merit pay. It does not produce better test scores. I mean, if you think about it, why would children work harder so that their teacher can get a bonus? Or why would they be slackers because their teacher is not going to get a bonus? This is like no relationship between the means and the ends. So merit pay has been a disaster, and all the testing, it was No Child Left Behind that began with the George W. Bush mythology, and that was George W. Bush ran in 2000 saying that there had been a miracle in Texas, and that if you just test every child every year from grades 3 through 8, the test scores magically go up. The gaps between white and black and Hispanic and Asian students will close, and everything turns good just by testing kids every year. Well, we've been doing that now for 20 years, almost 20 years. It started in 2002, 2003. So it's almost 20 years, and what we've seen is no progress whatsoever.
We're going to take a quick break. We're speaking with Diane Ravitch, historian of education and research professor of education at New York University. And we should say that Chicago has more than 600 public schools, and Chicago teachers went on an 11-day strike. It was their longest strike in more than 3 decades. And according to the 74, this is a nonprofit, nonpartisan news site covering education, the Chicago Teachers Union won 209 additional social workers and 250 additional nurses over the duration of the contract. In the short term, this means an additional 44 social workers and 55 nurses next year above what the district had already budgeted. And we're hearing about the lack of nurses, social workers, and librarians across the country. Diane used to be a proponent of things like charters, high-stakes testing, but now she is a full supporter of funding public education and making it more equitable. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on KALW Local Public Radio. If you have a perspective you haven't heard in today's discussion or a question that you feel needs to be answered, please join the conversation by calling 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. Toll free. You can also send an email to yourcall@kalw.org or post a comment or question on the show's website, yourcallradio.org, or tweet us at yourcallradio. How reliable are breathalyzers? That's the question on 1A in the next hour, starting at 11 o'clock here on 91.7 KALW.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will speak with members of Dance Mission Theater in San Francisco as they celebrate their 20th anniversary. This is an incredible institution in San Francisco. They're going to have a one-night performance, Adelante, on Friday. It'll feature artists who have made Dance Mission an incubator for innovative performance art. They also do incredible political modern dance. So I hope you can join us for that. If you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can send us an email, yourcall@kalw.org. And on Friday, we will go over election results. Today, we are talking about what it will take to fully fund public education and make it more equitable with Diane Ravitch, a historian of education and research professor of education at New York University. Her forthcoming book is called Slaying Goliath. It's about the resistance to the privatization of schools and the billionaires who are working to privatize schools. And teachers, communities, students, so many people are standing up against that. And if you have a question or a comment for Diane about the current state of public education and the changes that we've seen over the last couple years, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org or tweet us at Your Call Radio. Diane, before we talk more about the Chicago strike, let's talk about funding. There's a new report out from the Education Law Center called Making the Grade. And they point out that, and this is really important, state and local revenue on average account for 92% of total funding for public education. So state and local revenue is about 92% of total funding. And then the federal government, primarily through programs targeted for low-income students and students with disabilities, contributes the remaining 8%. And they found that over the last many years, funding for schools, especially in high poverty districts, has been chronically underfunded. They look at Arizona, for example. They provide just $8,569 in per pupil funding. That is the lowest among all states. They provide almost $6,000 less per pupil than the national average. So let's just talk about what has really changed when it comes to funding public schools. This is a really important report, and I'll just read a little bit from it. I just mentioned Arizona, and in the introduction, we meet Elizabeth Millich, who teaches elementary school in Phoenix, Arizona. In 2018, her salary was $35,000 a year. Like 94% of public school teachers nationwide, funding for her school was so tight that she had to dip into her own savings to pay for classroom supplies. And she's not alone. We've seen so many stories about this. In 2018 and 2019, chronic and severe underfunding of K-12 education led educators in Arizona and at least eight other states to publicly protest the lack of funding resources and low wages in schools. And so a lot of people are working two and sometimes three jobs. We've spoken to a lot of teachers who drive for Uber or Lyft at night or work in warehouses during the holidays. So they teach at school and then they drive at night. And these are people who have families. So this is incredibly very difficult and not sustainable. Diane, are you back with us?
I am back with you. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay. So I was talking about this Making the Grade report that looked at various states that especially have schools where a lot of poor kids go to school, and they have just seen funding drastically decrease. What can we do to change that?
Well, you know, you asked me before, how did this begin? It begins by saying, let's hold schools accountable. Let's have lots of tests. And where the scores are low, let's punish the schools. Now, if you understand that the reason that scores are low is because of high poverty, closing the school doesn't help the kids and it doesn't help the teachers. It just punishes them. So we've had almost 20 years of nonstop testing, punishment, money being taken away from the schools that were educating the poorest kids. And it doesn't make any sense. This is kind of upside down, backwards, and insane. I should also warn you that when you quote the 74, this is an anti-public school website that was created by former CNN anchor Campbell Brown.
who has been leading a campaign, or she used to lead a campaign, and so she went to work for Facebook. She was leading a campaign to take away tenure and seniority from teachers because she believed that the teachers are bad and they need to be, they're so many sexual predators. She had all this whole negative thing about teachers.
Huh.
She created the 74 with the support of a half a dozen or so billionaires who gave her tons of money to open the 74. And she ran that. She's a very close friend of Betsy DeVos. And then she was invited to take charge of media relations for Facebook. So she's not there anymore. But the 74 continues to be a website that is very hostile to unions, very pro-charter school. And it's just something you need to know as background when you read their stuff.
No, I appreciate that. I mean, you'd really never know it by just looking at their headlines about the 1619 Project in the New York Times.
Right.
Decent story about the Chicago union strike.
Right. But, well, they are not friendly to unions, like so much of this disruption movement. They would like to get rid of unions, and they would like to get rid of tenure, and they would like to get rid of all job rights that teachers have.
Mm.
And one thing I think it's important to mention in relationship, especially the Kentucky and other states where teachers' pensions have been under attack, there are about 15 or 16 states where teachers are not eligible to get Social Security. So when their pensions come under attack and they're not eligible for Social Security, you're basically saying, sign on to be a teacher and you'll have nothing left when you retire. You'll have no Social Security and no pension. You'll only have your savings. And since teachers are drastically underpaid as it is, this is not much of an inducement for anyone to become a teacher.
Wow. So if you're, for example, let's say you even make 50 grand a year, you cannot get Social Security?
I don't have the list of the 15 states, but it's easy enough to Google them. And regardless of what your salary is, if you're a teacher in those 15 or 16 states, you're not eligible for Social Security because the assumption is you have a pension. You work for a public employee. But that's not the case in 35 states. But when you attack teachers' pensions, you're basically taking away a right that they assumed they had when they signed on to be a teacher.
Wow. What about funding, Diane? Just to go back to that, I mean, you often hear politicians, a lot of people say, more money is not the answer.
Well, more money is the answer. Certainly, parents who live in affluent suburbs spend a lot of money on their children, not only what they spend on their schools, because their schools get much better funded than schools in the inner city, but they spend more on their kids in terms of giving them lessons, taking them on trips, making sure that they have access to books and to whatever they need in terms of their own computer. So affluent parents spend a lot of money. Affluent communities spend a lot of money. But when it comes to poor kids, I'm just afraid that there is something of, for want of a better word, a racist reaction and saying these are not white kids, they're black and Hispanic kids, they're not my problem, and somebody else will take care of it. And so in schools like... In Texas, for instance, the student population of public schools is majority Hispanic and black, largely Hispanic, and the legislature is overwhelmingly white and white men, and they just don't want to pay for the education of non-white children. So it's been every year, whenever the school funding comes up, it becomes an issue of, are you going to pay for the education of children who don't look like you?
Right. And, I mean, if you look at just the funding from governments, state and local governments, according to Education Trust, school districts serving the largest populations of students of color receive about $1,800 or 13% less per student in state and local funding.
I think that's true. And it's in large part... I'm not sure if this is true in California, although California itself is underfunding education. But in schools in states that rely on property taxes, clearly there's going to be less local funding. And unless the state steps up and equalizes the funding, there's going to be less funding in the districts that have lower property values. California as a whole, by the way, underspends the rest of the country. California is somewhere at the median, and it's one of the richest states in the country, probably has more billionaires than any other state in the country, and they should be paying higher taxes. And unfortunately, the billionaires of California have thrown their lot in with the California Charter Schools Association, which is very well funded, And instead of creating charter schools, they should be fighting to have higher taxes on themselves so that they could pay more to educate the largely Hispanic population that's in inner city schools in California.
Right. According to the Sacramento Bee, California is ranked 41st in education spending nationwide. And according to this Making the Grade report, 17% of school-aged children in California are living in poverty. California got a D grade for funding level and an F for funding effort.
Well, you know, that requires political will for the legislators to say we have to raise taxes. Obviously, they shouldn't be raising the taxes on the people with the least. They should be raising the taxes on the people with the most. I have a kind of a personal beef about people who are billionaires, and I noticed that Forbes magazine put out their list of the world's billionaires and American billionaires. There were so many billionaires that they usually have a list of 400. There were many more billionaires than 400. And there were many people who were billionaires who didn't even make the list because the list was so long.
Wow.
I don't believe people should have a billion or 5 billion. In Jeff Bezos' case, it's 150 billion. And in Bill Gates' case, it's over 100 billion. And Bill Gates, of course, chooses to live in the state of Washington, which has no state taxes or no state income taxes and no corporate taxes. So I think we have a problem in our society about people of low income being hoaxed into voting for candidates who don't want to tax the very rich, and it creates huge inequality. The other thing I think that ties into the growing inequality is the decades-long assault on unions. And I don't belong to a union. I've never belonged to a union. But what I do believe is that unions create a middle class, and we are losing our middle class, and that's very scary.
To your point about taxes, Diane, then this is so important. San Francisco per capita has more billionaires than any other city in the world. And we just did a show last week with UC Berkeley professor Gabriel Zuckman about his new book about how the rich dodge taxes. And in 1970, the richest Americans paid more than 50% of their income in taxes. But today, because of all of the Republican tax cuts, which some of them were supported by Democrats, billionaires now pay less taxes than school teachers.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? During the Eisenhower years, back in the 1950s, the marginal tax rate was something like 90%. So there was far less of a wealth gap, far less of an income gap than there is today. And what's happened is that the people who have the most money have invested it in organizations like ALEC, which is the American Legislative Exchange Council. And if you don't know ALEC, you should definitely Google it. That's where big corporations and very wealthy people write state laws in favor of deregulation of everything. They write laws to deregulate gun control, to oppose gun control. They write laws to deregulate environmental efforts. And so many of the southern and midwestern and even western states have simply adopted ALEC legislation one state at a time to take away any kind of protection of the environment or public education. A lot of the charter and voucher legislation also comes from ALEC, and a lot of the tax on teachers comes from ALEC, and ALEC has been supported by the DeVos family, the Koch brothers, and on and on, and major American corporations.
Today,
it's all about lowering taxes and making sure. I mean, you know, I don't, unfortunately, I wish I had $1 billion, but if I had $1 billion, I wouldn't object to taxes because a person with $1 billion can afford to pay more taxes. Why should they simply say, let's cut public services to keep my taxes low?
Right.
Because it makes for a more unequal society, more unjust society, and it ends up hurting the neediest.
Today we're speaking with Diane Ravitch, research professor of education at New York University. Her forthcoming book is called Slaying Goliath. It's about the resistance to the privatization of schools. She's actually the author of 12 books. She used to support things like charters and high-stakes testing. Now she opposes them and fully supports public education. And you can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall at kalw.org or tweet at yourcallradio. Let's go to Greg in Palo Alto. Hi, Greg. Welcome to the show.
Hello. You know, I don't think I have much to add to this, but I would say this. I've lived here long enough in California to watch this decline happening over decades. I mean, at one point, California was one of the outstanding states with regard to education, and look how far we've sunk. I mean, it's criminal to watch what both Republicans and Democrats have done in the legislature to underfund schools, particularly schools for minorities or people of color in this state. And so, it's unbelievable that we had people like Jerry Brown, the governor, voting. He was a supporter of charter schools. I don't even know how that happened in this state, that they were allowed to get a foothold and go forward. I think there's a movement now to try to really rein in charter schools in the state. But on the funding issue, which is really incredible to me, is that what they don't want to do is raise taxes for some reason on people who are rich. Instead, they'd rather pass bond measures, okay? And that would mean incredible interest payments on the part of most people in the state. It's not a way to fund the schools, and I just don't understand how the Democrats could be involved in this. I mean, you brought up the issue of, I don't know, maybe I didn't hear this correctly, but it would almost make you wonder about racism as being a real factor in this whole thing, both poverty and race. So I don't know if there's anything more that you would want to add to this, but I just think it's criminal the way the state and the elected officials have allowed this to disintegrate over decades in California.
Well, to add to that, according to the Chronicle, California spends about $11,495 per student and $64,642 per prisoner. And the difference is the largest of any state, according to the Chronicle.
And the indifference and hostility to education funding will guarantee there will be more prisoners.
Right, exactly. Well, and this is the thing, Diane. Like Greg said, we're not just talking about these deep red conservative states. This is a state that is run by Democrats. I believe right now they have a supermajority in Sacramento. So they can pass tax increases without any Republican vote. And I'll just search this to make sure I have that right. So, Diane, I mean, what are your thoughts about this? We're not just talking
about
West Virginia.
My thoughts about it are when you ask why has the defunding of education and why has privatization been bipartisan, which I believe it will not be going forward, it's because of campaign contributions. When there's a group that's called, so many of these reform groups have deceptive names, there's a group called Democrats for Education Reform. Education reform has become a kind of a code word meaning disruption and privatization, which is, I think, really unfortunate. That's why in my new book, Slaying Goliath, I say I will not call them reformers because reform is an honorable word, and I will not allow them to have that word. So I call them the disruption movement because that's what they're really good at, is disrupting schools, disrupting education, disrupting communities. But the reason it's bipartisan is because of groups like Democrats for Education Reform. These are hedge fund managers. They're based largely in Wall Street. They have a huge number of billionaires, and they decided that that what was needed for in education, about which none of them were expert, by the way, was privatization. So they're huge supporters of charter schools, of high-stakes testing, of measuring teachers by the test scores of their students, which is a totally failed idea. And Democrats for Education Reform bundles campaign cash, and they ask their supporters, hedge fund managers all over the country, send money to politician X or Y or Z. One of the leading Democrats in Congress until recently was George Miller of San Francisco. George Miller was the House Education and Labor Committee, and he got a lot of money from Democrats for Education Reform and became a supporter of No Child Left Behind. He's one of the sponsors of No Child Left Behind, which was a terrible punitive and failed law, and then he became a big supporter of charters. Then when Obama was a senator, Obama was invited to the inaugural meeting of the Democrats for Education Reform, which was held in a hedge fund manager's penthouse apartment in New York City, and he won the support of all of these incredibly wealthy guys from Wall Street, which he needed for his race. This was 2005. He needed it for his race in 2008. So when he ran for president, he had all the Wall Street people and hedge fund people solidly in his camp, and they gave him a list as soon as he was elected, and they said, this is our number one choice for Secretary of Education, Arne Duncan. Well, Arne Duncan failed in Chicago, And his views have just been completely repudiated by Mayor Lori Lightfoot in Chicago, and have repudiated by the teachers union strike. But Arne Duncan wreaked havoc on American education for the seven years that he was the Secretary of Education. And frankly, there is very little difference between what Arne Duncan did and what Betsy DeVos is trying to do, but is being rebuffed. And I said that in the future, this version of testing and privatization will no longer be seen as a democratic movement for several reasons. First of all, Betsy DeVos is the face of the so-called reform movement, and no one considers her a reformer. They know that she's out to destroy public education. And secondly, the teacher strikes in states across the country, both red and blue, have really stripped the mask away from this phony idea that this is reform, and it's nothing to do with reform. It has to do with shifting the cost of education and allowing people who don't want to pay for public schools to go to charter schools. And third, the NAACP in 2016 came out against charter schools and said there should be a moratorium on them until they become accountable and stop kicking out the kids they don't want. So there have been all these kind of sea changes going on, and none of them came with one big bang. But together, they have made a huge difference. And the other thing that's happened, I have to add it to the list of things that's made a huge difference, is the federal government gives a test called the National Assessment of Educational Progress every 2 years in reading and in math. And that has been reported since the late 1960s. And we saw steady progress in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s. And then No Child Left Behind was passed. And for a few years, with all the test prep and testing, the scores went up. But since 2007, from 2007 to 2019, the scores have been flat. No progress whatever. And with these so-called reformers, these corporate reformers, in charge at every level of the federal government and in most of the states, they've seen no progress. So these are the things that I think are beginning to really have an impact on how people see education, which is that it's not overfunded, it's underfunded. Mm.
Well, thank you for the call, Greg. And yes, the Democrats do have a supermajority in Sacramento. They do not need a Republican vote to increase taxes. We have a comment from Carol, who couldn't stand the line. She's a retired teacher here in California. And as you said, Diane, that's one of the states that does not give Social Security to teachers. And she said that it's so difficult because teachers have to take money out of their own pocket and pay for school supplies, pay for things like special ed resources.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, that's a disgrace, isn't it?
It really is. And the other states include Alaska, Connecticut, Nevada, Texas, Massachusetts. It's a mix of really Republican and Democratic states. Diane, before we let you go, let's just talk on a more positive note about what's actually working, because these teachers are out there. I mean, the 24,000 members of the Chicago Teachers Union were out there for 11 days. This is the longest strike in more than three decades. And before the strike, they were already in negotiations with Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot. And the original offer was a 14% salary over 5 years. The union asked for 15% over 3 years. So let's talk about what actually is working on the streets.
I think what's working is, first of all, there is just a wealth of research that shows that the primary cause of low test scores is poverty. And I think that that common sense understanding is beginning to get through. And I think that the other thing that's working is the realization that we have to deal with rational, common sense approaches to schooling, that schools need to have well-paid professionals. They need to have stability, not having the schools closed and open and closed and open. This is an insane policy that we've been following in this country for 20 years. So I start by saying you can't do anything right until you stop doing what's wrong. So stop the over-testing, stop the misuse of testing. By the testing, as you I'm sure know, is largely a reflection of family income. I mean, there are some variations, but on every standardized test result I've ever seen, the wealthiest kids are at the top and the poorest kids are at the bottom. So I think that recognizing that means we have to do something about poverty, which means we have to do something to make sure that people have jobs and income, and we have to reduce poverty. In terms of schools, we should make sure that every school has a nurse. Every school has a full arts program. Schools have reasonable class sizes. Teachers can't teach when they have 35 or 40 kids in a class, and some of them don't speak English, and some of them have disabilities. So I think there is a common sense approach that is beginning to take hold, and that the more people understand who is behind the attacks on public schools, the less they will support it. And I'll just mention one other thing, which I think is a sea change. There was a referendum in Massachusetts in 2016, and the Walton family, which is, they're worth $150 billion. They own Walmart. They poured millions of dollars into Massachusetts to pass a charter referendum, raising the cap on charters. And the teacher union there, the Massachusetts Teacher Association, went all out. They put in millions of dollars. They didn't match the Waltons. They were outspent 2-1. But the voters rejected the effort to lift the charter cap. In Arizona, just this past spring, there was a huge Koch brother voucher referendum to say, let's expand vouchers. It went down 2-1. So when the voters are asked to express their views, they don't support privatization. Mm-hmm. And I think that my advice, based on having looked at these issues across the country, is the more you can bring it to the voters, the better off you'll be, because voters support public education. They don't support privatization.
Well, Diane, thank you so much for joining us, and we'd love to have you on when your new book, Slaying Goliath, comes out.
Oh, well, thank you. It'll be on January 21st, and I look forward to being in the Bay Area to talk about it.
Oh, great. We would love to have you in studio. Thank you so much for
great.
Your work, and thanks for
thank
joining
you.
Us.
Bye-bye.
Diane Ravitch is a historian of education and research professor of education at New York University. She has a really interesting background because from 91 to 93, she was assistant secretary of education under the George H.W. Bush administration. And she was a big supporter of things like charters and high stakes testing. And then she saw the outcome and she did a 180. And now she opposes those policies and fully supports public education. And in the coming weeks, we're going to talk about equity in schools and also poverty, as Diane said. It's pretty shocking to learn that more than 17,000 Chicago public school students are homeless. 17,000 just in the Chicago public school system. So we're definitely going to do a show about that. Thanks to Leah Cesarine for producing today's show and Kevin Vance, our studio engineer. If you'd like to listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. You can follow us on Twitter to find out what's coming up at Your Call Radio. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.